A PubMed study when I was in my first year health science, drugs and society class, that showed that in China, a third of the population believe that any person with any mental illness is dangerous. So this could be schizophrenia to even anxiety, they think is dangerous. So I feel like that's pretty extreme, even for being a very recent study. I think this was from, I think, 2007, which isn't terribly long ago, but still, I don't think beliefs have changed very much.
Yeah, still within the century.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And then I had something else to mention, too. There's also, I want to go back to my family as well or my Korean side of the family for being stigmatized. So I don't know how I want to phrase this. My grandparents, but my grandma has faced very, I think, severe anxiety throughout her whole life. I'm kind of tripping on my words here. And she never really saw a therapist, or she never tried to fix things and talk about it, because in South Korea, you're not supposed to talk about these things at all. You are looked down upon. And if you even mention that you're struggling, you are shamed and your whole family is shamed. And this attitude is still very, very prevalent to today's age, which is really saddening. I know that South Korea also has one of the highest suicide rates for being one of the most developed countries, in comparison of all the most highly developed countries, which is terrible. And I feel like this stigmatizing behaviors are a part of this.
Mm-hmm.
So
for sure. I guess that kind of leads us into self-stigma, mm-hmm. which kind of stems from public stigma as well. It's that there's just a lot of internalized shame that is gleaned from how you see the public reacting to mental illness and stuff like that. So
yeah,
that leads to lower self-efficacy, worse mental health, and it's much harder to recover when you have self-stigma and internalized shame. It's like very hard to reach out for help and things like that.
Mm-hmm. I think, this is the kind of thing that you work on in therapy best. I feel like this is, where we're going to head on later on.
It's coming up. And then there's just one more kind, structural, which is definitely kind of tied in with public. But those are just stereotypes and discrimination that are built into our systems. The healthcare system, for example, it might not be really built for dealing with people with mental illness as much, or it might be harder to get care for people with mental illness.
Yeah, it's where the public stigma kind of falls into structural. It's when these personal opinions of, like, the nurses and the doctors and the healthcare providers, they have these internalized views of people with mental illness, and they might reflect it in their actions when treating these mentally ill patients, which is not good at all.
And another small example of structural stigma is definitely, I think, with a lot of like mental health house calls with police and stuff can end in not so good ways, because there's like, again, like the individual stigma is there, but then because they're representing like a structural body, it's also kind of built in. So but one thing about stigma is that talking about it is actually proven to reduce it, which is good. There is a study done, also PubMed, watching videos of people who are sharing their personal experiences with information about their own mental health, actually increased the people who watch those videos to seek more mental health help.
Oh, cool. Like those, I've seen those TED Talk videos of people with mental illness struggling and overcoming challenges, and I think those are very inspiring.
Yeah, just to like, even it's enough just to know that you're not alone in some things is very helpful.
We're getting our research, we gotta all put it together, but yeah. And something else I'd like to mention is with spreading the message about reducing stigma, it's also good to use the proper language surrounding people, especially with mental illness or above. So, for example, it's changing our common language and into more not as dehumanizing mm-hmm. terms. So, for example, the biggest one I can think of is the drug addict / calling someone a junkie is, I personally find, the worst stigmatizing language, because mm-hmm. it's just so dehumanizing to reduce someone to the word junkie.
Yeah.
It just sounds like they're a piece of trash or something like mm-hmm. that. And it's terrible because they're just people who just end up in these unfortunate situations most of the time from just the life struggles that they were put into. And so the proper term that is used in the scientific community as well is person who uses drugs. So it's also PWUD.
Mm.
But it's kind of a mouthful to say. That's the only thing about it. But it's better to say that over junkie. I can't stand the word junkie. I don't want to be associated with
that. Or like crackhead or something.
No,
like
yeah,
that.
It's terrible.
Awful.
It's so bad. Yeah. And there's
just
other
completely
ones too.
Just like disregards.
Yeah, disregard
their entire like experience. Yeah,
exactly. They did
so
much.
At that point.
So yeah, there's that, and as well outside of mental illness, there's things like, you're crazy is something that I personally don't really like. It's you might have heard it in a lot of normal conversation, but this is something that's specific to women, I find particularly. I don't think a guy has really experienced being called you're crazy as much as a woman being called crazy. Because crazy is usually associated with being very overly emotional or irrational, and being very crazy is also mentally ill. Like being,
yeah,
having,
it is.
Yeah.
Like kind of a way to gaslight woman. It mm-hmm. can be used that way. Like putting her in this situation so she's reacting a certain way, and then calling her crazy is. I've seen, like, that happens.
Yeah, so it's using these stigmatizing mental illnesses and then propelled and boxed into an insult. And so let's stop that, too.
Let's move on from
let's
this
move
kind
on.
Of language.
Let's
yeah, definitely.
Move on. And, yeah, that's just one thing I wanted to put out there for just changing up the language along with speaking about stigma and mm-hmm. things like this. And also, another thing I wanted to mention is that I just started reading this book called When She Woke by Hillary Jordan yesterday. I'm already very hooked, but I feel like it's a very good representation of stigma, but manifested in a very physical aspect. So it's just a small, brief description. It's basically where this woman, she's convicted of murder, but the murder is abortion, because this is a very dystopian society that she grows up in.
Well, it's kind of similar to some places in the modern world.
Yeah, similar, definitely very similar. And so, yeah, it's basically where the church and the state are combined, and so they have...
Yeah, it doesn't sound too dystopian to me.
But, and anyway, so instead of being sent to jail for the rest of her life, what they do is send her to an asylum for 30 days, and they inject this virus, which changes the color of her skin to red. And so she is now labeled as a chrome, and she's released back into society, where she has to be a chrome and painted red for the next 16 years.
Oh, wow.
That
is
stigma at its finest.
Yeah.
Like, that's exactly... I was reading that,
it's
and I was like,
physical representation of stigma.
Exactly.
Sure.
And so you can be painted multiple colors, too. There was blue people. There was yellow people for misdemeanors and things. Mm-hmm. The blue people were child molesters. I thought that was a little weird. But there are people out there like that. And, yeah, I just thought... I haven't got to the part of the book yet where she's getting ridiculed in public as much yet, but there are already events, like children are running up to her and screaming in her face and things like that.
Yeah.
And that is just, I feel like we aren't that extreme with our our discriminatory behavior to people now, like those with mental illness or such, but I feel like people...
It could be, though.
Yeah, could treat them in that kind of way. So, yeah, I just thought that was a cool connection with stigma that just happened recently from a book.
Yeah, so. Definitely. That is a good example. Moving on from stigma to one of the solutions to stigma,
yes.
which is talking about it. So, therapy. which, as DJ Coco mentioned before, it can't really fix the structural or public stigma, but can definitely work on self-stigma and could potentially fix public stigma if enough people are aware of it and, go to it.
Mm-hmm. What were your... Have you ever gone to therapy, DJ
Yeah,
Star?
I have gone to therapy. There's two different experiences I had. And I think something very important about therapy is just finding the right therapist for you, because the first therapist I went to her for really bad anxiety and also depression. And the first kind of session we had, she was just asking me all of these questions about myself, and I was answering them, but definitely feeling a bit invaded. I didn't really know what therapy was supposed to feel like. And then I just told her my entire life story and all of my deepest, darkest thoughts. And then she's like, okay, yeah, it's nice to meet you. I'll see you next week. And then I never saw her again. I didn't go to therapy for a while after that because I just felt so...
Oh, you didn't yeah.
Exposed. But then I went to another therapist for this other bad experience that I had. I was blaming myself for it. I had anxiety about it. My self-image was different because of it. And she really, really helped. Just having a caring but also objective perspective on some things really helped me, because also with self-stigma, it is skewed, your image of yourself and things like that. So just having someone to provide a foundation for you to think of yourself in a different way was really, really important, and definitely shapes how I continue to think from then.
Oh, interesting. Did you walk out with any solid tips?
I think this sounds really obvious, but kind of going back to the quote before, I definitely didn't used to have any self-compassion. I just hated myself. I blamed myself for everything. I was just kind of always angry at myself. There's never the other side of it where I was oh, wow, okay, I did a good job with that, or I didn't deserve that, or there's just no balance at all. So I think that was just a really big thing looking back, because I would be beating myself up about certain experiences just in the past. But then looking at it from a more compassionate and self-compassionate perspective just really helped me. I think that was the main thing
That's good. Yeah. Are you continuing to see therapists, or are you hiatus?
I stopped for a while because I went for one main issue and she really helped me with it. But I think I could definitely keep growing and learning if I went to her more, and I can go back. But it is also hard, admitting to yourself that you need therapy.
Yeah, definitely.
There's
agree.
Been some times you're oh, I would really want to talk to her, but I'm just going to tough it out for a while, and it normally gets better, but it still would have been probably more beneficial to go to her. So it's a long-term solution instead of just toughing it out, which I think a lot of people
do. I feel it's kind of the guilt of taking therapy. Mm-hmm. For me, I also have gone to therapy before, and just from that, I sometimes just feel very guilty of having the chance of having therapy.
Yeah.
I just feel oh, there's other people with worse problems out there, and why am I getting it? And so you just have to let it go, and you can't... Everyone has a different situation, and if you need help, you need help.
Yeah.
So...
And I think even everyone can benefit from going to it, once a month or something, and just talking about what's going on with them, no matter who you are, what mental health problems you have. I think everyone, it's really useful.
Yeah. And even not just a therapist, I feel having a trusted friend as well, and just talking things out, because I feel there's not a lot of friendships where you can go very deep with to talk about very deep topics. But if you can, it's awesome for your mental health.
Yeah,
I feel
definitely,
especially sharing experiences too. But yeah, for my side of therapy, I've been going, probably started around last year or so. It's definitely the university stresses. Certain.
Yeah.
So as we all know, university is stressful, but life after university will be more stressful. So my mom kind of... mentally preparing myself. But to have good habits when you're young, especially, is what propelled me to wanting to go into therapy. And my mom as well, she pushed me into therapy
Yeah, my mom also was like, you need to go,
yeah,
girl.
Like, go. But yeah, even though if you don't feel worthy of it, it's always great to have these foundational habits and things to know at such an early age, which can help you for the rest of your life. And so, yeah, it's very vital. And for me, I definitely had a lot of, anxiety that I needed to go over.
Yeah.
I had a lot of inadequacy, especially in, I think I mentioned this before on air, but just a feeling of not good enough is a big one, and probably the biggest one for me. And I feel comfortable saying and talking about it just because I feel like I've grown to a point where I'm getting better at dealing with it. But yeah, my therapist was really nice the first time. She's on maternal leave right now, but I haven't seen her in a while.
Oh, man.
But it's been good. Life has been going fine. But she gave me a bunch of tips to go over. And to be honest, I haven't really used any of them.
Just, me neither. My therapist also gave me tips with anxiety. And that is just one of the things that I feel like therapy has not helped me with yet. But
Just, I feel like as you move progressing through life and just moving forward, you find a way to solve it. And just having someone to talk with just makes it feel better, not the actual
just to
techniques.
Acknowledge it. That it's there.
Exactly. Even though maybe it didn't work for me or DJ Star, I have some of these tips that I was given. So here's some free therapy techniques if you'd like that we paid for and now sharing for free. But I was told for one was called ACE grounding. Not sure if you did it. No.
That's here.
But it's basically ACE. And so it's a technique for when you're really stressed in the moment, you have a really overtaking thought. And what you're supposed to do is first acknowledge the thought. And so you just say, hey, okay, I acknowledge that I'm having this thought. Let me just sit here for a moment. And then see, you have to come back and you basically have to touch the senses on your body. So you have to crack your knuckles.
Oh, yeah. I had something like that with those senses.
Yeah, just make sure, my body's functioning. Here are my fingernails, things like that. And then the third is to engage with your five senses. So outside of your body, just look around the room. I feel like this one's a very common one. Mm-hmm. Probably you've done it too. But just using the five senses, seeing what you name five things you can see, four things you can hear. Mm-hmm. Pretty sure. Yeah, three things.
Yeah, what are the senses?
Yeah, well, I forgot the senses already. But anyway, you just use your five senses, use them around your room. Just make sure that you are not your thought and you are not in the same room. The thought is not in the same room physically as you. Yeah.
I actually remember one. It wasn't like a technique, because I feel like those kind of things where I have to think really hard about an order just makes me focus on the anxiety more and trying to get rid of it. But something that my therapist told me is just to do things that get you back into your body instead of in your mind. So running, dancing, stuff like that, anything that will just that you like doing. That you can just do a little bit, and then it will help things. I actually do notice that it helps my anxiety if I'm just, dancing in the mirror when I'm really anxious. That definitely helps. So, yeah, I just remembered that.
Yeah, I was told the hobby thing, too. And just, even though it might not line up with your career goals or your ambitions, and it's just good to have hobbies that are completely unrelated to what you want to do in life and what you think you should do to succeed. Yeah. But just things that you want to do just for fun is something that's so vital that I think a lot of people need, should try and do. Like, for example, the radio station, my therapist was the one who actually said to I was telling her about the radio station a lot, and she's like, oh, you're getting so excited about it. I'm so happy. And so she was the one who pushed me into continuing with the radio station and not trying to leave to
go
volunteer at the hospital.
DJ Coco's therapist.
Yeah, or do something that I thought I should be doing, which...
Yeah.
And same with exercise, too. I found that I kind of fell into kind of a spiral if I didn't exercise.
Mm-hmm.
So I've just not recently, but I've been going to the gym and running a lot more this year. And I found that my mental health has been crazy high compared to last year.
Yeah, it is... It is kind of, like, cliche to say, like, oh, exercise helps, but it does. And it's hard to get out there, and I hate saying it, but it definitely does help.
So, yeah, exercise, I feel like, is a massive one that reiterates a lot, but it is so, so important.
Yeah.
And have you ever felt post-therapy exhaustion, though?
Oh, like, mental exhaustion kind of thing? I've definitely, like, cried an entire therapy session and then just felt, completely depleted after that. But I've also had, like, post-therapy clarity.
Oh, clarity.
Where I'm like, wow, I feel so much lighter and, like, happier with myself right now.
Oh, man.
How about you?
Because I feel drained after a therapy
session.
It is.
It goes deep, inside of you.
I have to take a 3-hour nap after every single session. So it's like every Tuesday morning I took a nap after waking up. So
yeah, it definitely it's a lot of mental energy to process. Because normally we don't really regularly talk about those kind of things either.
Yeah, not even with family.
There's no way
I would talk about this with my family. Not that they're bad or anything. It's just some things feel even too personal for family.
But is that self-stigma?
Ooh, I don't know.
I don't know.
Tying it back in.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that was the end of my kind of personal note. Mm-hmm. But I think we wanted to talk a little bit about the resources, too.
Yeah. I also just wanted to acknowledge that
therapy
is definitely a great tool, but there are still a lot of accessibility issues with it that are, magnified within marginalized groups. Especially marginalized groups are more likely to be misdiagnosed or underdiagnosed, and that ties back to the structural stigma, but also, structural racism, ableism, etc. But I did find this pretty good kind of mega sheet of more accessible, more affordable therapy. And we'll link this in the description to our episode. And by the way, guys, we post our episodes on cjsf.ca. So you can check that out. And there's a link there. It's the Willow Tree Master Document in Vancouver, July 2024. But there's also, for the SFU students out there listening, there is SFU Health and Counseling.
Mm-hmm. I know about this because I was looking it up at one point.
Mm-hmm. I feel like every SFU student
must have looked. But yeah, it is free and it's completely confidential and it's for all SFU students. And you can basically go into the online portal. You can book up to 2 days in advance at the scheduled slots that you'd want. And they have a bunch of registered psychologists and counselors that are very qualified, and they can do it online on Zoom. I'm pretty sure you can do it in Surrey too, but I think that's an awesome resource that definitely should you utilize if you're a student here.
And there's another one at SFU, the Sexual Violence Support and Prevention Office. I know that one's pretty good as well. So it's for any students that have been impacted by sexual violence, if your friend has a loved one, family member, if you have personally, they kind of cover it all, which is good. And I just want to reiterate that we will post that master document because it has stuff for Indigenous people with disabilities, all that kind of thing for counseling. So
so definitely if you think you need therapy or if you think you need to talk to someone, Go for it.
Just check out some resources.
Always do. We will, we definitely support you and whatever you want to do.
Exactly.
But I think we are done with...
We are done talking.
I think it's been too long once again, but we're ending
it's an
up...
important topic, though.
It is.
Because talking about it does destigmatize.
Yes.
So maybe we weren't talking long enough to on the other side.
It is very important. So, but I think we have a couple more songs.
Yeah, a couple more songs, but I think we should say goodbye and thank you. Thank you guys so much for listening. We really appreciate it.
Next up will be Revolution Rock.
Yeah.
And then right after at 8 p.m. will be Bitcoover with our music coordinator, Connor. Woo! So stick around for those two. But thank you so much for being here. We are so happy you've joined us for our blabbing / pretty tangible conversation. I think we had a good conversation.
It's good.
But
Once again, Slumber Party, DJ Star.
DJ Coco. Sorry, DJ Coco. I had a mind blank here. I was like, what's my name?
And this song is Last Night I Saw My Love by Astral Swans and Julie Dorsdahl. Please enjoy.
Enjoy.
Looked at me. competitive way.